If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. Ian has got that connection through the city, and he's Ian Ferguson.
Yeah, I am.
I am Pat Contry. We got a lot of stuff lined up. We're going to be talking about Nintendo World Championship 2017, 7,500 NES systems for sale, the Olympics being added to gaming.
Being added to the Olympics.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Olympics being added to gaming. We've done that already. That's called track and field and winter games.
Yeah.
We're also going to be talking about, we're doing a Patreon Q&A and other stuff. Ian, before we get all to that, talk about Game On Expo and your Mortal Kombat experience.
Well, first of all, Game On Expo was a lot of fun, but we'll probably touch on that a little bit more later. But let's talk about my favorite story for the Game On from Game On Expo. It's about the guy who plays Jax. What was his name?
I have no idea. But Game On Expo, they had six Mortal Kombat characters, including Daniel Piscina, who was the original Johnny Cage and Scorpion and Sub-Zero. They had Sindel. They had Jax.
Yep.
They had Shao Kahn. The Sonya Blade from Mortal Kombat 3, and one other person I can't remember.
So, anyways, it's Friday. It's the first day of the convention. It's early.
Friday.
I got to take a wicked pisser. And I head to the bathroom, and it's a big bathroom, and it's completely empty and because it's early. And as I'm walking in, Jax is at one of... And Jax is ripped as shit.
There's not many men that make me feel inadequate as a man. Jax makes me feel like a little puny, tiny little.
He's more ripped now than he was when he played Jax.
Could be. I'm not going to go to tape measure and measure his pecs, but it could be. You could be right.
I'm pretty certain. So anyways, he's at the far urinal. It's a big bathroom. Don't think he notices
like
anyone walking.
Seven, eight years long, right?
I don't think he notices anyone walk in. And as I'm walking in, he's zipping up and he flushes. And out loud, he says to himself, "Woo-wee! That feels better." Turns around, sees me, gives me a quick little nod, and just scurries out the door as fast as he can, looking at the floor. And just something about it tickled me so pink.
Ian wins. Humiliation. Literally.
That was good stuff.
Game On Expo was fun in general. Great to see our pal Norm the Gaming Historian, and also Andre Meadows, who is becoming could be my most favorite person in the world at this point. Any other highlights from the weekend besides me spending way too much money and you guys witnessing me doing my Tetris packing for 45 minutes to fit everything?
Doing the stanky leg with Phil Moore.
Phil Moore from Nick Arcade was there. Phil Moore is a character. He's fantastic.
Literally did the stanky leg with Phil Moore on Sunday morning. He jumped in front of the table and was like, "Good morning." And I was like, "Hey, Phil, how's it going?" And he just started going, "Stanky leg, stanky leg," and doing the stanky leg. I mean, I didn't know what to do back, so I just started repeating, "Stanky leg, stanky leg," and doing the stanky leg with him.
Have you ever actually had real stanky leg before?
No, but it's a dance.
Yeah, but stank leg. Like, I guess it means when you got like a loose stool coming down your leg. That's the way I interpret it.
Oh, No.
It's never happened to you?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I guess that makes sense given the dance.
That's what I think. I thought that's where it came from. We can look it up online. Urban Dictionary.
Sure, that makes perfect sense.
All right. Anyway.
It looks like you're shaking a stool out.
Yeah, stanky leg.
Yeah.
Let's not go too deep into this explanation.
A loose stool that is running, dripping down your leg like hot pudding.
Into your sock.
Into your sock, yeah. Permanently soiling your shoes and your foot forever. Anyways, yeah.
Other than that, there is an NES Punk episode on the way. Woo! I'm editing it. Woo! It'll be out by next week. Woo! We also have a preliminary date set for the... Holy shit, is it the 8th annual NES Marathon coming up? Yeah. For the 8th annual NES Marathon. Yep. And there's a preliminary date. I don't announce it right now. I want to get my ducks in more of a row to shoot their heads off. But we'll there's going to be an announcement coming within the next 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully. It might be something different than what
it
you guys are used to.
It should be pretty exciting.
If it comes together, like the A-Team, I need a mohawk, like B.A. Baracus, I think. I always wanted to do that.
I'm always the Mad Dog Murdoch of the group.
Are you really? Is that...
Yeah.
Maybe a combination of Face and B.A. Baracus.
I was going to
say.
Or
Hannibal.
Yeah, Dirk Benedict.
Dirk Benedict.
Do you know he took on that last name after eating a plate of Eggs Benedict?
Benedict?
Yeah.
Because Eggs Benedict is so... Could be the most underrated breakfast food ever.
Yeah, I know. I would
top five breakfast food.
Here we are agreeing. Yep, yeah. Top five.
We agree
food.
Most time on breakfast.
Yeah, we do. Except for buffets. But
well, we're gonna go to a good one though. I'm gonna drag your ass to Bally High. That's the exception. Ian. You gotta.
Oh, Bally High. Okay, yeah. I'll go to a Bally High breakfast buffet.
That's like a breakfast blowjob that lasts hours. That's
okay,
basically what that is.
I'll tell you what. I'll do the Bally High breakfast buffet.
Thank you. Do I have to pay for you to go?
No, you don't. No,
okay,
not at Bally High.
You can let me treat you for that $40 buffet. No,
I love Bally High so much, you don't even have to try to convince me on that one. It's taken you 2-3 years to try to talk me. Four.
Really? I've been asking for 4 years to go to Bally High.
No, but I'm just saying the first time you ever tried to talk me into a buffet was MAGFest 2014.
Our last MAGFest? No, 2015 was the last one.
No, it was January 2014.
But that was a good one at the Gaylord. That was a good buffet. That's where Joey Rue stole food off my plate. He stole my locks.
I wasn't impressed by what people were saying.
Well, excuse me.
But Bally High, I like that place a lot.
Okay.
All
right, anyways. We're going to do a Sunday brunch date. Maybe we'll do a YouTube Live. We'll do that. That's the thing that kids are that's the latest thing. I want to get into YouTube Live. I can do that from the flea market. That'd
Hopefully they have avocado toast.
Oh, okay. So we were at Game On Expo. We did a wacky ass CU podcast panel at 10:15 in the morning on Saturday.
The Continental Breakfast Podcast.
Yes, the Continental Breakfast Podcast. My freaking hotel did not have a continental breakfast. It broke my streak of like 12 in a row of continental breakfast and my conveyor belt pancakes, which I love. But we did do it. So we're going to now cut to us discussing Nintendo World Championships 2017. You can see how incoherent we are because we're half asleep with no food in our bellies. So we're gonna do a nice segue to that right now.
Let's talk about Nintendo World Championships.
Sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
And also Nintendo World Championships 2017 that was just announced a few days ago. So did you guys know about that one that took place a couple years ago for the 25th anniversary of the NWC 1990?
Yes.
We talked about it on the podcast. By show of hands or applause, it'd be too embarrassing playing this back because there's no one here. By show of hands and applause... Have you guys heard of the one that came out two years ago?
Yeah.
What did you guys think of that? I thought it was kind of, I don't know, it was like there was the retro tree challenge or something. Like
treehouse.
Branching into a, they had like a branching path on a map for the events. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It was a mess.
It was weird just because they had the one of the, remember that the big announcement was the Metroid game and it was that Prime Federation Force 3DS mess.
And that was met with a thud.
Did that game even come out? Did anyone buy that game? Who bought that game here?
I don't know,
anyone?
But I actually saw a copy of it come through the store the other day.
Really?
So one person bought it, at least.
They bought that right here. Yeah. Oh, they have NWC 1990 shirt on. So so it was a decent event. It was weird because there's eight locations that you had one winner at Best Buy stores, and then you had eight YouTuber/celebrities to engage in. I think Eagle Raptor was a person that was one of the eight, and they all, I guess... had like they were teamed up, which I thought was weird, and then they split them out after the teams for certain events. So it was kind of a strange event. Nintendo, don't kill me. But They're bringing it back for 2017, Ian.
Yes, and hopefully it won't be as convoluted this time.
But it's going to be, they're going to have 8 Best Buy locations.
It's starting on August 19th, and they're doing qualifiers with Mario Kart 7, which I think is an interesting throwback. But I imagine they're doing it because everyone's played Mario Kart 8 a ton recently.
Well,
so they want to go back to something where people are going to have to practice up on it, I think.
Well, either that or the Best Buys don't have enough switches to go around to set them all up, you know, for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
That's also possible.
But it might be easier just to manage the little 3DSs with people. I don't know. Might be easier to link them up against each other if they wanted to do something like that in the store. Or is it time qualifier? Correct?
Yeah, you're racing against the ghosts.
So competitors ages 12 and younger will play on Luigi's Mansion track as Mario using standard kart, standard wheels, and super glider. 13 and older will be doing Bowser Castle 1 as Bowser with the same car configurations. So it is a best times. Local qualifiers will face off at the championships proper in New York City.
New York City.
This sauce is made in New York City.
Why did we all collectively remember that?
We all remember from 1997 at the same time. But it's interesting. So it's not going to be at Universal Studios. It's not going to be... You think it'll be at the headquarters at New York World? Yeah. Nintendo World? New York World.
New York World.
That famous location. Anyone who visits the participating Best Buy locations on the days on the qualifiers will get a chance to play Super Mario Odyssey. Get that marketing in. Advertising. And then along with Metroid Samus Returns. A Metroid 2 remake.
A Metroid 2.
My Nintendo members can also receive 100 platinum points by checking into the event with their QR code.
You always got to get that in there. You know, make sure you're using My Nintendo Rewards. Does anyone use My Nintendo Rewards?
I still use it.
Okay, what do you actually get from it?
Crap,
okay. I feel like they've just hooked a lot of people into doing it for no reason. Because I haven't done anything since Club Nintendo.
I miss going to the swap meet and finding the random DS games over the case and snapping pictures of the codes that weren't used. That was always good. I think I got a puzzle that way for free back in 2007.
I did some nefarious means of gathering.
So does it turn you off that, like, the 2015 event, it's only in 8 locations? I think there's not even one in San Diego. It's L.A., San Francisco, New York. Do you have the article in front of you?
You were holding it.
Well, because you weren't looking at it.
I was.
I don't want to touch your grimy, non-case closed iPhone 4.
You're a crude man. You're a crude man, and I don't like you. San Jose, Chicago, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Dallas, Seattle, and Miami.
San Jose? San Francisco?
No, not San Francisco. That says San Jose.
L.A. was in there?
Los Angeles.
All right, you want to drive up for that?
No.
Hang out with Andre for the weekend, maybe?
I would like to hang out with Andre, but I don't want to do any sort of competing in a video game tournament while land-eating vines.
Well, I think it was hours and hours of wait time a couple of years ago from what I heard. It was like 6-7 hours to wait. Anyone here try to do the 2015 qualifier? How long did you wait, sir?
About 2 hours.
2 hours at what location?
So I was in New York.
New York? 2 hours? What time did you get there?
About 6:30 a.m.
And it's just that, was it that one day or the weekend you got?
That was the one day one.
The one day one. Oh, awesome. So that was not bad, but 6:30 in the morning, and the line behind you was probably ridiculous, though.
Yeah, so when I left, it was around the building.
Okay, so you potentially can wait 7 hours.
Yeah.
But what game did you play back then?
So that was the 3 of them. That was Mario 1, Mario 3, and then the Dr. Mario.
Oh, they took it from the remix. It was the remix one, right?
Yeah.
The remix competition.
That's right.
So I wonder why they're doing Mario Kart only then. I don't know.
Because as much as I love Nintendo, everything they do is ass backwards and a clusterfuck.
Oh, everything. Absolutely everything.
Most.
87%.
87% of the things they do. I don't know. I feel like they do it now because it chases the nostalgia, but there's... I don't feel like they put a lot of effort into the tournament.
The tournament itself?
Yeah.
The actual day?
Yeah.
When they did it? I just didn't like all the team events. How do you stand out in a team event? You know, like they did the Splatoon thing. Obviously, they're using this to push their games at the same time, obviously.
Sure.
I can almost guarantee you that Super Mario Odyssey is going to be a part of this competition. Like, they're going to fit it in somehow. You know, they're just going to try to throw in everything they can.
Right.
While having, we're going to give you, play Balloon Fight for 23 seconds again. By the way, I'm not kidding. I would have won Balloon Trip at that competition. I'm not, that was not the best showing.
And I think one person got on me saying, well, I was there and it was lagged. And I was like, all right, fine. But, okay, I'm being petty right now. I'm very petty.
You're being petty.
Petty. Well, I'm not petty, but the fact that I wasn't asked to participate, but you know, you get the YouTubers out there, you get the people that have millions of views, and I don't, you know.
That's not the sads.
Not the sads right now. This is what happens when I want breakfast. Can someone run and get me a breakfast burrito?
Will you stop using the audience?
I'm not using the audience for anything. I'm asking them. I'm not demanding you, sir, get out and get me a burrito.
Run and get me a burrito, sir.
I'm
going to
run to waffles.
Waffles? Where are their waffles at?
You could have let me know. I
haven't
brought them.
How am I going to get in touch with you? On Twitter? Hey, the guy that said that you're going to bring me waffles. Bring me waffles? Okay, tomorrow, bring me waffles.
Quick, go back in time.
One day only.
Oh, too bad. The audience is sassing me now. The audience is turning on us. Back to NWC. So, I mean, okay. So when is this happening, Ian?
It starts on August 19th, and then it goes through September, and then it happens October 7th.
In New York City.
Salsa Town.
All right, that's our topic. Du jour. We'll come back to that later. So we got 50 minutes of time to fill right now.
And we're back. Ian, the points you made were so salient. I tell you, at the 2 minute, 47 second mark, that was brilliant what you said right there.
Yeah, and you really came strong with your opinions at about the 3 minute, 87 second point.
I agree, Ian, but your counter at 4:29 was right on point. Okay. Ian, there's a really weird, as you crack your knuckles and get into it, really weird Craigslist listing out there.
Yeah, this is, okay, so this is very strange. So Craigslist, this is in Phoenix, actually, which is unique, just because that's where we just were. And it's titled Unlimited Supply of Nintendo NES System Consoles.
Could this have been a plan to draw us in, part of the long play?
This is part.
This could have been part of the long play.
Inside joke. This is part of the long play.
a pyramid of NES consoles.
So, listed 3,040. Anyways, so it reads, I have over 7,500 Nintendo NES console systems for sale.
That's respectable.
I will not sell less than 50 at any single time. I sell them two ways. First is untested as is for 30 each, or clean and 100% for 45 each. Don't send me offers or trades, they'll be ignored. I can do a similar deal for DS systems, DSi, XL, Lite, Original, etc., and televisions, Ataris, etc. This is interesting.
Who the hell is this person that is stockpiling systems as if a nuclear war is going to happen?
Right.
Well, it might at this point.
I mean, in a bunker, 7,500? I mean, that's insane.
You don't need to knock any limiters at that point. Just toss out the old console.
All right. What's interesting to me, though, is the pricing. Just from a business perspective, we buy, at Luna, for instance, we buy a Nintendo system from someone that, as long as we can see, even if it's flashing constantly and it's a pain in the ass, as long as we can get at least a flashing picture after a handful of tries, we'll pay $35 for it.
$35, no hookups and controllers?
No, with one controller and the hookups, we'll pay $35. With one controller and the hookups, we'll pay $35, knowing that we have to put legwork into getting it good
clean
and going,
yeah,
as long as we can see a picture, even if it's flashing or scrambled.
Okay.
Or we do $45 in credit. So, untested, given that Nintendos are generally fixable and repairable and just need some cleaning, it's not a horrible price, at least for a business, to me. I don't think that's awful.
I think it's awful. No AC adapter. No controller.
I'm sorry. These have nothing.
They don't have anything with them.
Oh, no, then that's awful. That's shit. I'm sorry. I'm thinking along the lines of these have everything you need. No, that's awful.
No, this is a pyramid of NES consoles. Who the hell is this person that said, how do you do that?
I have no idea.
How many years would you have to look at all your flea markets, even if you owned a game store?
Yeah.
And took them all in and never sold any. How long would it take you to get 7,500 in Phoenix?
I feel like, how long is it going to take you to move them then? I mean, I want to make sure everyone knows I'm clear. I'm totally backtracking on my statement.
Back the fuck up.
Yeah.
This is insane.
You back the fuck up. I made a mistake.
Just because you humiliated Jax doesn't mean you can talk to me that way.
Anyways, that's insane for an untested system, given that you would have to get controllers, hookup cords, even though wholesale, the cords are cheap. That's insane.
I would say untested, if you have 700, you should be happy for 50 times if you got $15 each.
I was going to say, that's exactly what I was going to say.
That's right.
Without a controller and without hookups, 15 each untested, maybe.
And that's
15, sure.
And an NES, you can get, I would say, 95% of NES consoles working with a little bit of cleaning the pin. I'd say that 95%, I think, are safe.
Luna drops $5 for every missing cord. So that means Luna pays $20 for just a system that we know we can get to work.
With an AC adapter. Without an AC adapter.
So basically it starts at 35, knock 5 off for without an AC. Without one cord, knock 5 off for another, knock 5 off without a controller.
If it doesn't have a composite, you knock $5 off?
We knock five, basically anything it's missing.
Okay. Just as a general rule.
We knock five off.
Definitely the controller, definitely the AC adapter. The
so
composite, I would argue, well, that's
so
like,
the lowest we would pay for an NES that we were sure we can get working with cleaning is 20.
So this person then is basically asking for a minimum of $1,500 because you have to do 50 times 30, untested. And even if most of them work, that's still not the greatest.
No, that's a pretty.
And then he's going to charge, cleaned at 100% for 45 each without anything. So then you have to piece together, if you're at a retail shop, an NES will go for what? $70, $80 with two controllers at this point? We'll just say $80. You got to get two controllers. That'll cost you between $10 and $15 if you want real ones, right? So we'll just say $15. You're up to $60. An AC adapter, let's just say, is $4 or whatever. And then a hookup's another dollar or two. You're going to be making like $15 profit at your store on that investment all that time. That's not worth it for most people, probably.
No.
Especially if you buy a minimum of fucking 50 of them.
Yeah.
That's the best deal you can do. You got to sell them, buddy. You're the one who can build a tree house out of these. So that's insane to me.
I feel like it should be minimums of 20.
I feel it should be half that price. And then do, 20 or 25.
No, I agree that it should be half that price and minimums of 20.
Obviously, maybe this person is joking. The picture shows probably about 200. Right? If you look at the stacks and what you can count there, it's probably 200 or 250. But you don't know how far back they go or how many other rooms there are. I really find it hard to believe there's 7,500.
I feel like if you call up and set up a meeting, you'll walk in and you'll see Fat Cat from the Rescue Rangers prancing around on top of a pile smoking his cigar. Uh-huh. I mean,
but the fact that he says, I can do similar deals for DS, DSi, /XL, /Lite, says original.
And that's what really gets me is like, what has this person been doing?
How many? You don't have 7,500 in televisions laying around. I mean, I'd be shocked if you had 50 of them, and Ataris maybe
and working.
Yeah, and then
because in television controllers are so prone.
We're going to have 300 Atari systems.
Up, yeah,
you know, like at most that you've got 7,500 NESs. Maybe he meant 750 and dropped an extra zero. You know, like maybe it was like that, or maybe it's the same person that had the 150 night traps because they're around here. maybe they just come by. They collect everything. You know, who knows? All right. Well, that's a fun topic, Ian. We like people that are hoarding thousands of game consoles. Ian, the 2024 Olympics are going to be here before you know it. And then they're going to be in L.A. in 2028. They're going to come back. We're going to see that when we're close to 50 years old. Mm. And Frank will hopefully be still alive and can watch wrestling in person again, like he did in 1984. But the host city's Paris in 2024, and they're thinking about those good old Olympics. Ending a gaming tournament.
No.
Well, remember the Olympics a few years ago when it was in Rio? They had a gaming tournament not associated with the Olympics, but they had one around the same time to try to legitimize it. Hey, it's esports. We're trying to get it in there.
The only esport is Fire Pro Wrestling.
So the 2024 Summer Olympics, according to GameSpot, could feature video game competitions. The co-president of the Paris Olympic Big Committee told the Associated Press that discussions will be held with people from competitive gaming circles and the International Olympic Committee to discuss the prospect of having gamers compete for Olympic gold. Tony Estanguet, the co-president of Frank's Bid Committee, told the Associated Press that the gaming community deserves to at least be part of the discussion. No, they don't. They don't. But okay, that's what you want to go with. Okay. We have to look at it because we can't say it's not us. It's not about Olympics. The youth, yes, they are interested in esport and this kind of thing. Let's look at it. Let's meet them. Let's try if we can find some bridges. I don't want to say no from the beginning. I think it's interesting to interact with the IOC, with them, the esports family, to better understand that what the process is and why it is such a success. A list of trial events for the 2024 games in Paris will begin to take form in 2019, while the official sports list for 2020 games in Tokyo will be announced right then. So, all right. The Blizzard chief officer, Rob Pardo, said there's a very good argument to be made for gaming being a part of Olympics. I think the way you look at esports is that it's a very competitive skill set.
300 actions per minute and stuff, they talk about that, et cetera.
And you look at these professional gamers, and the reflexes are lightning quick. And they're having to make very quick decisions on the fly. When you look at their acts per minute, they're clearing over 300.
Here's my problem. My big problem with the idea of gaming entering Olympics is that Olympic events, at this point, mostly, are tried and true and remain the same from Olympic to Olympic to Olympic. With gaming, well, okay, if it gets accepted, it may start with Dota 2.
Mm-hmm.
But Dota 2 is not going to be a timeless test of esports Olympics.
There'll be another MOBA that comes out a few years later to replace it.
Right. So you
same with the fighting game.
So you don't have these classically trained athletes who are learning and competing in a traditional sport. And while I don't really give much of a fuck about the Olympics, at least there's tradition and heritage to the sports that are contained within the Olympics.
Going back to ancient Greece.
Yes. And while there have been new events added over time.
And some taken away.
They are more or less traditional sports that do not change over time and do not need updating. Esports would need updating. And that's not, to me, that's not, and like I said, I don't really give a fuck about the Olympics, but just for the sake of argument, that's not in the spirit of the Olympic Games. That's my issue.
Sure, that's one of them. Like I said,
I have other issues, but I think that's the most basic argument one can make against it.
I think it's disrespectful to Olympic athletes. I just think on the outset, the fact that a video game can come out, you can say, well, you gotta be good at video games before that. Fine. A video game will come out, the next Street Fighter, the next year then it could be in the Olympics. So I got to train at that game for 1 year when these Olympic athletes have been training for 20 to 30 years for an opportunity to make it. I think it spits on them. I just
do. I don't disagree.
It spits on them and the effort they're putting in, and it's not fun. Playing games is at least fun every day. It's not fun to train your ass off every day in track and field and grind it out and then maybe get an injury one day and your hopes are fucking dashed forever.
Right.
There's a high amount of risk when it comes to being an Olympic athlete, and those Olympic athletes in many of those sports are trading purely for glory. They're not making money. Amateur wrestlers don't. There's no. The professional wrestling, yes, you can have a couple amateur wrestlers going in there. 99% of amateur wrestlers, they're screwed in the U.S. Either they got to go somewhere overseas to try to make a small living. They're done.
Right.
If I'm a skeet shooter, that's it. I try to go for my gold. And that career is over.
It's done.
At that point.
Right. The esports professional gamers can leave the Olympics and go back to, making their money.
How many professional javelin leagues are there?
And, I mean, to be fair, I mean, just because someone will call us out in the comment section on it. Yes, there's you know, the USA, or there's the basketball players and the other major sports, you know, teams that can go
but
back.
But that's the minority.
But it is the minority of events.
Of Olympic events where...
I just wanted to point it out because you know yeah. there's going to be that one person who's like, what?
All right, showing that professional kayaking league. The two-person right. Kayak they do, yeah.
Or the bobsled team that's making the big bucks.
Biathlon. skiing and shooting league. That was actually a Saturday Night Live skit where they had Nancy Kerrigan talking about her, you know, going to the ice capades and making a ton of money with endorsements. And you have Rob Schneider have his face blown off, who was a biathlete. And you had Norm MacDonald, who was a luge guy. He's like, yeah, I'm going back to working at the Home Depot. And yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I think it's disrespectful for those two reasons. The other way is when I talked about in general, whenever I talked about trying to follow a MOBA on TV, it's fucking impossible to follow what's going on if you don't know nothing about it. It's some of these are going to translate to TV extremely poorly. Right. When you watch these first person shooter team games on TV, they go back and forth between both teams and one player at a time. You can't possibly follow that.
Only people who play those games follow them. The only And I'm not making an exception for this or saying that this would or I would watch this or make an exception for this in Olympics is fighting games are always fun for me to watch.
Yeah, I can watch that. I can watch fighting games and figure out what's going on because it's one-on-one. Because
it's a fucking fight.
But a MOBA? Yeah, but a MOBA? No. Absolutely not. And they couldn't even announce it properly when I was watching on ESPN on what is it, the fucking dorm tournament, whatever the hell that was. And then forget about first-person shooters because you're never seeing all the action at one time. You just can't. That's just the nature of it. You know, so as much as we want to see people getting bronze and silver medals for Splatoon in the future, I don't see it's happening for those reasons, as we stated.
I'd love to see Vani get gold in the U.S. for Splatoon, but yeah, I mean...
He comes up with some roses and gives it to her on the stand.
Yeah, exactly. But no, yeah, just no.
And that's not we're not trying to belittle the quote-unquote e-sports athletes or whatever. That has nothing to do
because
with
because there's a lot of skill with that. It's
there
just,
is skill.
It's just, it's not...
I've done somewhat competitive gaming, not professionally.
They're different beasts entirely.
Yeah, then if you do that, and guess what? Then you can make the argument then, all right, then chess is trying to get in forever. I don't think chess should be in the Olympics, but I will put chess in way before a video game.
Exactly.
Because chess has been played for thousands of goddamn years.
Yeah, I would put chess in
I put in fucking snakes and ladders.
No.
Which became chutes and ladders.
Shut
been
up.
Played for thousands of years.
Shut it.
A Mahjong?
No.
Oh, you had to think about it.
No, I wouldn't because it. I mean, on the same level of poker, you know, the best Mahjong, you know, the stat is something like the best Mahjong players, only win 34% of their hands or something like that, just over a third.
Just like poker.
Yeah.
Poker,
exactly.
If you win 25%, you're great.
There's skill to it, but a lot of it's reading. I mean, there's still a good percentage of luck there.
Yeah, that's an open door. You're going to have poker then in the Olympics. You're going to have board games. You're going to have fucking laser tag. You know, I'm sorry.
Well, laser tag at least is athletic and strategy. I mean,
you know, all right, fuck it. I'm laser tagging it.
Laser tag should be in let's there la- before any of the other
let's
ones.
Let's laser tag it. All right, this is an interesting story. Well, it's an interesting product. Hyperkin seems to be pumping out things we're talking about every month, whether it's a, you know, like a Game Boy adapter for your smartphone or what have you. How about the Save Wizard for PS4, Ian? The first and only save editor for PlayStation 4. Save Wizard for PS4 allows you to cheat on your save, allowing never-before-seen amounts of money, max ammo, character stats, and more. It's a save editor allowing you to cheat on your saves. They are not pre-made, unchecked, poor quality saves with alleged cheats uploaded by others. These are in-house produced and tested cheats, which you can apply to your save at any point and any time. So you can help beat the game or breathe new life into a forgotten classic. Optimized to work with your PlayStation 4 without the need to do illegal modifications, Save Wizard for PS4 is an easy-to-use program. All you need is a PS4 with the copy-to-USB storage device function enabled. A PlayStation Network account may be required to activate this. A computer running Windows 7 or higher with internet connection and any compatible USB drive not included. Supports all regions apart from Japan. So there you go, Ian. You're going to copy your save from PS4 to any USB drive, insert it in your PC. The software's going to detect your supported saves, and then you're going to apply the cheats there and, I guess, put it back onto your PlayStation 4.
Yep, exactly.
We've come a far away from Game Shark, right?
This is weird to me because since the PS2, basically since the advent and the release of the 360 and the PS3, and I guess you could even say the Wii, since the advent of online gaming, whether it's been forbidden through TOS, and I don't know if it has been
terms of service,
or not, you have not seen actual cheats, actual cheat editors, on these systems. And I think it's largely because of two reasons. One is they don't want people, you know, getting trophies and showing off.
Sure.
Without getting it. Excuse me, Jesus. The other is I don't think they want people to have unfair advantages online.
Well, and sure.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And that's my bigger concern.
Yeah, if you can hack your save game, yeah, you can unlock, I guess, all the achievements, right? All the trophies. But then I guess you can then level up your character for online play, right? You can basically bypass the need to play the game fairly or regularly.
However, when you look through the list of supported games,
there's 123 right now that are supported. It looks like it was last updated on August 12th. And 7,843 cheats total.
When you look through the list of games, I think they somehow might be bypassing the list of supported games. I think they somehow might be bypassing any problems because I'm not seeing any online-heavy games here. I mean, there's Dark Souls 3. If you look at the cheats, you get max souls and max items. So that could be detrimental to online play, but you're not seeing any, like, Call of Duty cheats or anything like that. So it's interesting to me because this is the first time we've seen, at least without a hack, that's the big thing. Without a hack, you're seeing it's not really a device, but cheat software that does not require a hack that allows you to actually apply a cheat. And by what I mean actually apply a cheat, it's not a save game you're downloading from someone who's already unlocked everything, mm-hmm. and you're using it as your own. Supposedly, this is actually applying an actual cheat to your already existing game save. It's interesting also that they did go out of their way, it appears, to avoid online heavy games. I don't know how I feel about this.
There's Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. There's Ultra Street Fighter 4. You want to run through it? So, from Ultimate MVC 3, max player points, unlock all gallery, battle data, max wins, no losses, no draws, max longest win streak, max hyper combo wins, max time over wins, max perfects, no cheap wins. Does that affect your online, like what is displayed?
It affects what's displayed, but it doesn't affect how you can play.
That's still bullshit,
though. That's basically allowing... Yeah, that is bullshit. That's basically allowing you to reset your win-loss records.
Ultra Street Fighter 4. Unlock all EX1 titles, standard titles, personal actions, character colors, icons.
That's not bad. That's not bullshit. That basically gives you access to cosmetic features to decorate your online card.
Ukulele, have all moves, Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap. No quick mode cheats are available, but can be edited in advanced mode. Okay. So, but the potential's here, though, to affect online play. Absolutely.
Oh, yes. The potential's there, and all it's going to really take is a third-party site, I think, to kind of crack this open. And that could ruin a lot of things. And Hyperkin knows this.
Rise of the Tomb Raider, you get max skill points, max ammo, max common resources. So, will Sony come after them?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Are they breaking a terms of service by hacking saves that people put into a PC and come back on?
Hyperkin's been shady before. I mean, with the launch of the, you know, Retron 5 using open source, you know, emulators and then charging for them, you know, and then trying to, you know, take care of it later. But I feel like they may have realized that they could get in a shitload more trouble with this, and they may have read the fine print or looked into it.
If Sony's not a bunch of emulator authors.
Right.
A little bit bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, I think that this has the ability to be abused by people who can really look into how this is working.
Well, if this can affect some way the bottom line, like if there's some way you can edit this to get like stuff like DLC early or something like that.
I did actually check that.
Was there something in there for that?
I checked because I can occasionally be interested in some pervy games. I checked Galgun Double Piece.
Okay.
To see if they had the Pheromone Z whatever unlock, and they don't. And that's a DLC that costs like an insane amount of money, like $70. And they don't have it on there. So far, I can't find any cheats that actually unlock DLC.
The Street Fighter one with the costumes, that's all stuff you can win in the game. Is that what it is?
For the actually,
Ultra Street Fighter characters, colors?
Oh, colors is not. Costumes would be.
Okay. So maybe they're going to be careful then and realize
right.
We got to do stuff that's only unlockable by playing.
But that's what I'm saying. If other people figure it out, like, and, you know, people who are good with this sort of stuff look at it and figure out how to,
then they're opening themselves
because
up.
Because colors are on disc. DLC for Galgun is on disc. Those costumes were known to be on disc, unlockable. So if someone else figures out how to use this and manipulate this
Sony
software,
will come after them.
Sony could come after
because
them.
If they start then unlocking time DLC stuff to get it early or something, you're going to have these publishers throwing a freaking fit.
What it also might do, though, humorously, is stop publishers from doing the fucking on-disc DLC bullshit.
Sure. But at that point, then, you know, you're going to hear about this.
Hyperkin's always walking a very fine line. And, I mean, we do. We make use of their products. But at some point, they're going to get themselves into some fucking hot shit.
Yeah, I would say that as a cheat device, there's always going to be cheat devices out there. If you're doing this for achievements, though, I mean, yeah, I guess if you don't want to play through a game to get everything. Oh, there goes my nerd.
I mean, I have no problem with cheating on single-player games. Like, that's one thing.
You're not online, though.
But not if you're doing online.
And that's breaking terms of service when you're doing it.
Yes.
For goddamn sure.
If you're doing it online, it's definitely breaking terms of service. Just like if you're using, rapid-fire controllers and shit online, they can, if they detect that, they can, you know, give you a temporary ban or a full ban or something like that.
Sure. Just very disappointed that, huge oversight, there's no Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat cheats at this point in time.
Because it's not on the PS4, which in and of itself is a very large oversight.
All right,
so,
Ian, we have a scumbag.
Scumbag.
Seller.
Scumbag.
Seller.
The.
Wheat. Before we get started, a quick, we have to now address the current scumbags and the past ones. So we called out that one up retro for hawking the fake gold cards. And I guess they went off on us, someone said, on their Facebook page saying, they're just sad because they're pushing that other NWC repro.
Yeah, the problem, the difference is, which
there's a small difference here that we point out, but we'll point again because you're fucking stupid.
I mean, it's only a tiny difference.
It's a tiny difference.
You fucking idiots. But it's that you are trying to make yours look legitimate.
Like can be used to
scam someone else, mm-hmm. Whereas you missed it. Because we fucking said it clearly on the last podcast, the other ones don't look legitimate.
They cannot be confused by even someone 10 feet away. That's
they
the difference.
They are a different color, and they come in a translucent shell. Am I speaking slowly enough? For you. They look nothing like the original.
And then someone said, well, that's like going after a knife seller if you end up stabbing someone.
So fuck off.
Really? You're compared to someone selling knives. Selling something that's a counterfeit item. That's what you're doing. Something that's going to be used to deceive people. By the way, you can stab someone with an NWC card, too, if you hit it the right area in the ribs. You know, you talk about cracking someone's ribs open before. We won't say who before in the podcast. Anyway, we have a scumbag seller of the week. Week.
Week.
And who is it, Ian?
It is Enchanted
underscore Eric.
Probably not 8-bit Eric, let's hope.
No, I don't. I don't think so.
So what are they selling? What is this Enchanted One selling?
Well, they appear to be... This one's twofold. This is great. Starting bid is US 1 cent. They list this as they are selling a Jason vs. Freddy NES hack ROM. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. That would be bad in and of itself.
Yeah, that would be scumbag worthy in and of itself.
Yeah, that would be scumbag worthy in and of itself. And we've covered that, you know, the fact that, you know, selling ROMs is awful. But if you go if you go down a little bit further, you know, just a little bit further down, and you read the description is one sentence. You will receive a link to the infamous Jason vs. Freddy NES ROM hack video on YouTube.
So they're going to give you a link
to a video.
YouTube video. But why is it? I never heard of an infamous ROM hack before. Did it kill someone? Did it do something dastardly that we don't know about?
Is it haunted?
Freddy?
Does it play the brown
versus
note?
Jason NES. I just typed in Freddy versus Jason NES, and there's, I don't know, 12 videos that came up immediately of Freddy versus Jason, Donkey Kong Edition, NES hacks, another NES hacks. You have Mr. Paku Paku's one. You have the LGN Defender playing it. You have K-Box playing it. So this isn't hard to find. It's there.
You know what isn't hard to understand? Making repros of NWC gold cards that look just like the NWC gold cards that could potentially be used to trick someone.
Pat, you're just doing it because you're afraid of affecting the value of yours. That's why. You're using your podcast to protect the value.
Scumbags.
That's what I'm doing. It's always fun, though, to look at what they're also selling besides. I'm just curious what gets in the mindset of selling, let alone a fucking counterfeit game, but from selling a fucking YouTube link.
Like, I'm confused now. Which scumbags are we talking about?
I don't know. They're all. But this seller, Enchanted underscore Eric, is selling a $3 off Cool Cigarettes carton coupon.
Oh my God.
a Blue Apron, $30 off your first delivery gift card. Well, we love Blue Apron. Proud sponsors of the CU podcast.
Hey, Blue Apron.
Use code, was it blueapron.com/Pat, is it, or CU podcast? It's one of those. Naked Wines, $100 voucher. And then a mini ping pong table dollhouse miniature model.
Oh,
very adorable.
A Grizzly tobacco coupon as
Grizzly
well.
Snuff, $7 yeah. off. A vintage Black Desk phone dial telephone dollhouse miniature. So they like dollhouses. And they like selling coupons to snuff and for cool cigarettes.
By the way, the value of that is 1/100th of a cent, not 1 cent.
So you shouldn't be selling coupons either. People do that on eBay all the time. Red Seal Long Cut Tobacco, $3.75 off. It's currently at 11 cents with two bids. You going to get in on that?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to start chewing tobacco.
My favorite is probably the New York City Metro Card Souvenir Collectible. It's a Metro card. I don't know if that was a souvenir. It's just a Metro card they brought back from their New York City trip. This stuff's made. Probably the favorite thing is the Marvel Universe Series 1 wax packs. I love the Marvel cards. So.
Those were great.
So anyway, so this is just hilarity ensuing every second. So Enchanted underscore Eric, I do like the miniature ping pong table for dollhouses. Maybe I'll get into dollhouse collecting at some point in time. But for not even for the ROM hack, for a YouTube link trying to get that off. Jesus Christ. Trying to pawn that off on someone, which is ridiculous.
I mean,
unless they are themselves playing it. That might be funny. Like, here's my link to it. You know, but I don't think that's happening. So anyway, any other words here? I want to play this ROM now. Maybe we'll play it on a certain NES charity marathon in the future.
I don't know. Maybe we should get into making gold NWC cards.
We should, because it's
ethical and fine.
It's a victimless crime, though.
Yeah, it's victimless.
Okay, what's going on here, Ian?
I don't know, some stuff.
Dollar Shave Club, Ian.
Oh, Dollar Shave Club.
You know what, Ian? You like to shave her once a year. I miss the Amish Ian days.
Well, we're getting there.
I'm going to shave again, but you know what you want to shave with? Dollar Shave Club. It's a high-quality razor at an affordable price. I have the Executive. It's four blades. Comes with six cartridges. It's a dollar. $1 with free shipping, no commitment. You can cancel any time. And those six shavers can last you a decent amount of time, depending on how often you want to, you know, want to replace those blades. There's the Humble Twin with two blades. Anyway, you go to dollarshaveclub.com/CU podcast, and you should go there just because you might shave again.
Someday.
But, you know, there's other body parts besides your face to shave. You get that unibrow. Sometimes your ears get hairy. Got pits and legs and arms. Are you a swimmer? You got to shave with Dollar Shave Club.
I use electric razors for those parts.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
More information I want to know.
You brought it up! You brought it up!
Dollar Shave Club's going to love this read. Yeah, they got the executive. It's a buck. The 4X, which I believe has a...
Which one's the executive?
The executive has... It's 6 blade cartridges a month, and you get 4 stainless steel blades on one of those. The 4X, oh, okay. The 4X is also has 4 blades. And the Humble Twin, I think 4 blades is overkill. Just give me 2. That's there,
see,
too.
See, I'm a twin. I'm you a twin, man.
2 is good enough for you.
I'm a twin, man. Yep, always
so,
have been.
Go to dollarshaveclub.com/CU podcast. Start with any razor for a dollar. No hidden fees. Cancel at any time. No commitment. Free shipping. Tell them Pat and Ian sent you. Well, there's no one to tell you. You'll be screaming at your web browser. Loot Crate, Ian.
Full of stuff. Packed full of jams.
Yeah.
But not jellies.
It's lootcrate.com/Pat. Use code Pat to get 10% off any new subscription. You have 4 days to get the August Loot Crate theme, which is Kingdom. Kingdom. You're going to get Legend of Zelda. Adventure Time and Lord of those Rings. Yeah.
Ooh.
That's right. And one lucky subscriber will also win a Mega Crate. A Mega Crate, which is like as big as like a fucking Mega Crate, I guess. How big is a Mega Crate supposed to be?
Probably about yay.
Bigger than a bread basket?
Yeah, bigger than a bread basket, but smaller.
I'm going to get the one from last month while you shill. Go.
Bigger than a bread basket, but maybe smaller than your game room.
Maybe. As that hums.
But that's a good one. Zelda and Adventure Time?
This is the one from last month. You have a... What shirt is that, Ian? What is that?
I don't know. You got to shake it out. It looks like a tank.
It's stuck. What is it? Oh, it's the Ninja Turtles and the Turtle Van.
Oh, that's fucking sweet.
You have a Bob's Burger book from last month.
That looks like a... Is that a book?
Yeah, it's a book. It looks like a book. A Futurama cozy, koozie.
Oh, yeah. Can I have that, please?
No.
Please?
Maybe one. There's 2 of them there. And then, oh, you get a Rick and Morty figure.
Nice.
That's Rick, right? I don't know.
Did you see... okay, then you didn't.
I've never watched the show.
Oh.
It's escaped me.
Pickle Rick was a really good episode.
I heard of Pickle Rick. He's like a commando or something. He's a murdering pickle.
It just came out.
Seems like a fun show. But anyway, go to lootcrate.com/Pat and enter code Pat to save 10%.
And get your crate of stuff.
And you have until the 19th to get your geek stuff. And after that, you're going to wait till the next month, which I don't know what the theme is. I'm going to guess the theme's going to be, I don't know, Deja Vu. The theme next month is going to be maybe Deja Vu. That's what it's going to be.
It's going to be a return of all your favorite stuff.
All right, this is a follow-up. Ian, you were out for like 5 months. I was lonely during those times. Back in December, it was about. I covered...
Did you have blue balls?
I had Ian balls, yes. Ian blue balls.
Ian balls.
Nice crunchy Ian balls. Crunchy? I covered an...
Extra-large almonds.
It wasn't really an Indiegogo. Of the Retro Engine Sigma. Mini video game console... it was some sort of pie, raspberry, orange. I don't know. There's
yo, this thing
pies.
Looks like hell. It was an orange pie. It doesn't work. Well, the immortal John Hancock did a video review of it. It looks like total shit.
Can you let me like actually explain it before you just editorialize?
I just wanted to get that out.
Okay. So it looked like a silver Sega Genesis, a mini Sega Genesis. Okay.
Yeah.
As seen on VentureBeat, Nintendo Life, Gizmodo, Kotaku, everyone covers these.
Hey, can you people stop covering these bullshit fucking repackaged fucking RetroPie and Kodi fucking devices? It's dumb. You make yourselves look fucking stupid. They never work as they're supposed to out of the box. They're cheap. They're junk. You think every single one is the fucking next Messiah.
Anyway, so this raised a lot of money.
This
raised...
Because you idiots keep fucking covering him.
That's right. $626,892.
Off the back of fucking idiots who are susceptible to fucking advertising and websites.
Well, they need stories, Ian. They have the deadline to meet. They have to have 20 stories, you know, every day, these writers.
Hey, it looks like a little Genesis and it's silver. It's cool. Buy it. It's going to play all your old retro video games.
Well, at the time, I said, this is no big deal because this is something you can just get off the shelf. As you know, you can buy your own RetroPie itself, the one that's branded with the little NES case. What is that, only like $40 by itself?
I don't know, but that one uses a Raspberry Pi, which is reliable.
No, do these
and heavily supported. This uses an Orange Pi, which is a fucking knockoff.
It's not even a real Raspberry Pi.
No, it's an Orange Pi.
They couldn't afford the raspberry variety of the pie?
Is there
a lemon pie?
And it, unlike the retro pie, you basically have to set this up yourself. You watch the John Hancock video?
I watched some of it. Handsome man.
He's a very handsome man. God, he's handsome. But it took him 10 hours to get everything installed just to have it crash on him. This happened to everyone. I mean, a lot of people. Some people still haven't gotten theirs, and they backed him in fucking back in the BC.
Before Ian back on the podcast, is that BC? Does that work out?
By the way, I'm really angry today.
Let's go to I'm sure the feedback for the retro engine. By the way, how much was this again on the Indiegogo?
Too fucking much.
Well, the in-demand one that you can still buy, the one they made it look like. Well, I guess it's supposed to be somewhat of a 2600. It looks like the radiator from a 72 Buick Oldsmobile knockoff. It's $79 plus shipping U.S. for this.
Oh, my
thing.
God. Come in your own mouth.
That includes the Retro Engine Sigma, an AC, a dual stick analog controller, a pre-installed 32GB micro SD card, which we'll get to later, which I believe has to be the card you use on the system. From the feedback I was looking at, you can't use your own prefabbed one. I'll just take it from my Raspberry Pi and throw it. No, you can't.
A lot of these things you have to use what's actually in there for like your BIOS. But and with this one, I mean, to give it a fucking positive spin, you can use a micro SD USB adapter to add additional memory.
Whoa!
For the games you can't fucking play.
Let's look at some of the comments on the Facebook page of the Retro Engine. I'm sure it's all positive. I'm sure it is. Their last update, by the way, was July 12th when the first units, I guess, started to go out. I'm still waiting on mine on July 29th. Shipped from Tonga? Really? Why is that? I thought that was funny.
I thought that one was good. A lot of people can't get video on their screen because it's particularly sensitive to the video mode you set it to. After 10 hours of installation, like our, I'm just going to call him our pal, John Hancock, even though I've never met him or talked to him, but you did an interview with him.
I did the Not So Common podcast. Thanks for the semi-plug-in.
You're welcome. Watch that podcast. A lot of people have had that problem where they get through the installation and it just hangs. And they said constantly that it was a custom board. Yet when you finally install everything, it just says Retro Orange Pie. It's just like, no.
It's off the shelf.
It's off the shelf. It's an off the shelf board.
That they came up with their own little silver fucking mini Genesis little shell to put it in.
Well, yeah, but that's not a custom board.
I know. I'm just saying, but that makes it customizable until you crack it open with a fucking hammer.
Deli wraps.
On the Indiegogo page, some users are having issues. Check out the Indiegogo page while I look at these. On the Indiegogo page, users are having issues with the Wi-Fi connecting. Next person. Got mine, but the video doesn't work. Customer service has been non-existent. Not pleased at all. Will probably file a dispute with my credit card company to get my money back.
Hey, Pat, did you read about the fact that you have to use your iPhone and connect the Retro Engine Wi-Fi through your iPhone?
Through your smartphone you have to do it?
Yep, can't do it through your router. Gotta do it through your smartphone.
That's strange.
It's extraordinarily strange. It's almost like they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And they just stole software and repackaged it. And sold it.
Well, potentially, allegedly.
Definitely. RetroPie and Cody are freeware software, and they took it and just repackaged it and sold it.
I recently, video gets displayed on my TV. They redirected to the Retro Engine website. You need to make sure the memory card is inserted into the unit. It might have come dislodged or even fell out during air transport.
Or maybe you just suck at manufacturing and packaging.
Someone's saying you just need to get connect your Wi-Fi via your phone, which took minutes. Works great. Comes with some games pre-installed. Overall, very happy.
15.
Off to look for ROMs.
15 fake games, probably, like Yawning Triceratops.
That's a real game. Yawning Triceratops.
It's on the Genesis at games.
Yeah. Anyone want one in the UK? I'm selling mine. All set up. All emulators download. That's all.
That's illegal to advertise, buddy.
Well, that's someone just not disappointed with
it. No, I know.
Do we know yet how to add PSX BIOS to be able to play PlayStation games? Well, they couldn't tell you that. People can't get theirs. Bastards, your piece of shit systems don't work. Give us all refunds.
Oh, that was the guy who typed in all caps? He types in all caps further down again, too.
Fucking thieves. Answer us. We've been robbed. Emojis of smiling face on the side smiling, in tears coming out, smiling, laughing.
Hey, maybe you should stop fucking buying all of these answers to all your retro game dreams that all the fucking websites cover and all you fucking assholes keep buying.
Can we have a fucking moratorium? That's the word.
Yeah, a moratorium on fucking Magic consoles.
Magic Box consoles.
That are going to do
Dreamcade, RetroVision Sync, Atari Box,
ColecoVision, Chameleons. What else is out
can we
there?
We just fucking stop on these just for... Give me 6 months to catch my breath. 6 months.
And then we'll launch the CU console.
The CU
the
podcast.
The completely unnecessary console.
The CU podcast RetroCade Chameleon engine.
Just the completely unnecessary console.
The completely unnecessary console? Because if me and Ian do it, we can sell just as many.
What we're going to do...
By taking the same open source emulators, getting the same Raspberry Pi boards, and throwing it into a fucking plastic box.
This is what we're going to do. We're going to get a Raspberry Pi board. Okay?
Okay.
We're going to put RetroPie on it. We're going to stick it in a novelty dog shit. All right?
With two USB ports?
Yeah.
Four.
And we're going to ship it, because they're going out of business, we're going to scour the flea markets and ship it with two used, uncleaned Mad Catz controllers. That's going to be the completely unnecessary console.
Of any type of console, you know, the controllers will come from, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And for the extra early bird, you get a free cockroach inserted inside.
And if you're extra early bird, we'll grab a bottle of nail polish and, like, give it a little, you know, special edition coloring.
Stop covering these!
Please!
Gizmodo, Kotaku, whatever the fuck, oh my god, Ubuntu is! 925 Toys, Beta News, The Awesomer, Slash Gear, Tom's Guide, Tech Briefing. You've seen 30 of these by now. Look, 30 of them.
If it's a slow news day, I'd rather get... I don't know.
They're not special anymore. It's over. They've been out for like 8 years.
Yeah.
Christ.
Talk about how useless they are.
Talk about how it's the same as the other 13 you've covered the past 2 years.
And how they've failed miserably and have never delivered.
All right.
Woo! All right. Great. Oh, good. This is going to go just as well.
From the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, my God.
Six charged of making fake Pac-Man games in Santa Clara. A Milpitas family and three people who worked with them at a Santa Clara manufacturer of arcade games.
Milpitas.
Were charged with forging Pac-Man machines, officials said Thursday. A woman, her son, and her ex-husband, who together owned and operated the company called CoinOp Store. Check the website. I think it's still online.
Yeah, it is, but they're very vague.
Are accused of forging for-profit machines that played classics such as Galaga, Tank Battalion, and five different versions of Pac-Man. Chun Chu Chang, 61, Kingsley Stewart Chang, Bruce Michael Burton, and a few others. Collectively, the six are charged with 14 counts of felony counterfeiting, prosecutor said. Officials said that the proceeds from the sales of the machines may be seized, including $1.2 million in cash, a 2012 Mercedes-Benz, a 2015 BMW, and five properties.
So, I don't want to accidentally get the name of this wrong. We have an article here that does, I believe, show the right name. Oh, Multicade. So it is Multicade. Multicade, you've probably seen these before. They usually have 60-in-1 seems to be the cheapest and the one that you see the most often. I believe they can have up to like 300 games in them. But they have like, they have a number of Namco games. Then they usually have some off, like not so common games like Crush Roller ripoffs or whatever. And, you know, maybe like a Donkey Kong called like Donkey King. But then they'll have like a Galaga and they'll call it Galaga or Pac-Man, but they'll change the color palettes around, to try to get around like copyright.
To try to make it like some sort of clone, but it's not a clone.
But it's not a clone. It's the actual game. Okay. They just like kind of changed like the color palettes.
It's the biggest change as Crazy Kong was. They still stole Nintendo's game.
Right.
Just altered it slightly.
Exactly. And, you know, you'll see these at bars, you know, and they'll usually have a couple of official games like, you know, next to it. But then they'll throw one of these in the middle because it's cheap and it has a bunch of stuff on it. And they're awful. And I never play them because it's obvious they're bootleg. And most people stay away from them. I don't think they make a lot of money anymore because people realize that they're just playing some sort of bootleg trash. I don't know. I mean, maybe a bar owner can chime in and say, and I'm not necessarily judging the bar owner because maybe they never knew what they were getting into, but I'm glad that these people are finally getting hit with this bullshit because it's just blatant piracy. And, I mean, the fact that they try to run this as legitimate business is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's coinopstore.com. And on that website, they're selling vertical and horizontal jam arcades, stand-ups that they're not marked. But yes, there is then the Multicade you can get there for $1,600.
That's the one I've seen the most frequently. Okay,
with a wood grain one.
Yeah.
They also sell the Dream Team basketball game, you know, with the basketball redemption thing. They have a pool table. And they have some LED upright games, as well as a cocktail one. So let's click on the classic stand-up arcade. Let's see what it says, unless they took it down already, because, you know, they're getting, you know, come after them.
As far as I could tell earlier, they've completely changed the wording on it.
They've changed the wording by now?
Yeah, I don't think it says anything about included.
Does it say about games that are included? So the funny part about this, or the reason why this could have got more light, is because according to the Kotaku article... Namco Bandai
is located in the same city.
They're also in Santa Clara.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it directly, but maybe it's like, oh, look at those assholes down the street. Look what they're doing.
Yeah.
They didn't get the license for the Pac-Man game or Galaga. Fuck them in the ear. So they're not, I guess the San Francisco Chronicle article has them saying they're fake Pac-Man games. It really should be them going after they haven't licensed the games that they're including in these multicades. That's more accurate.
Yeah.
It's not they're making a Pac-Man stand-up arcade machine. They're making generic games, like multicades that include these games, and now they're getting taken down a peg.
Yep.
Because I guess you can go the route from other companies and actually get them licensed. You can license the packs of games out and make it totally legit, and I guess they didn't.
Yeah, and like I said, I've seen
allegedly...
I won't say where, but I've actually seen them at bars in San Diego, bars that I like. And the colors are just all wrong. You know, they're like pale greens and like gross colors. And
they're thinking that's going to be enough to slide by.
Right. And I mean, they play just like the originals. It's just everything is off about the palettes and stuff like that.
All right. Well, this will be interesting because if this goes through, you're going to have other companies make sure they you know, cross their T's, dot their I's when they're making similar machines and make sure their games are licensed entirely and not using maybe even, you know, copyrighted like material, like artwork and things like that. And you make them totally generic to begin with and making sure that, you know, obviously the games are licensed from, you know, the actual companies that own the copyrights.
Right.
All right, Ian, this could be the best or the worst thing ever coming.
I think it might be it could be in between.
Could be in between? Could be Action Park-esque. Basically, you've heard about Action Park in New Jersey, the horror tales.
Yes.
Which I think they brought that back. It was closed for like 15 years. They brought it back.
So, anyways, the title is fucking clickbait, but it says Super Mario Kart Racetrack is coming to Niagara Falls. Canadian side of the falls, by the way. The U.S. side of the Niagara Falls is a place you would never want to walk barefoot because you might get a crack vial in your skin.
Unless you want that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, you know, some people have interesting fetishes. But they are building a Mario Kart-esque racetrack. And so HOCO Limited, a tourism and resort company, is making one, and they're almost finished with it. And it's called Niagara Speedway. It's first of its kind and largest in North America. It has a four-story corkscrew. Now, this is for go-karts. Four-story corkscrew, multiple elevated coaster sections, and it's expected to start testing this fall and open next year.
So this thing's like 50 feet above ground, parts of this.
Yeah, it's insane looking. And along with the racetrack, there are some whatever. So that doesn't matter. It's interesting because it does literally look like a Mario Kart
course
track, yeah. Honestly. And it does probably take some inspiration from Mario Kart. When you look at most go-kart tracks, you have two types. You have the more serious ones that are the speedier ones where you kind of have to have, like, I don't know if you have to have a license, but you have to take, like, a test lap and pass, like, a brief.
Okay.
There's one in San Diego, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like an oval course, and you have to pass like a brief test, you know, to be able to go out, and then you get to go out and do your race, and then and they're speedier, and then you have your normal go karts, and some of those are just like flat, you know, figure eights, or you might get like a slight raise and a bridge or whatever. I've never seen anything this complex and interesting before.
Yeah, they gotta get permits for this. It has to be, make sure this is safe. I would try it if I knew this was safe. The guardrails on some of this though are just look like singular metal, like the metal ropes, like it looks like, you know,
that, yeah,
like much thinner than that you would see
right
at the zoo, keeping lines back from you, and then little rubber tires. So someone could potentially die on this ride, which I guess is part of the fun.
Well, this is like 30 minutes away from my home in my hometown of Buffalo. And I mean, just now today, I'm not really afraid of dying. So if it was open today and I was home, I would totally go ride on this. I mean, it looks like a shitload of fun.
Yeah.
And we're only looking at pictures of
I'm looking at the picture. There's one picture of the entire track.
Well, no. These are photos of the one. If you look at the article, these are photos of the one in Branson, Missouri.
Oh, so this one already exists.
But this the one they're building in Niagara Falls, Canada,
is going to be
bigger and more complex.
Oh, okay. Because the one in Branson looks like that would be good
already
enough.
Looks crazy.
The one in Branson has a four-story, like you said, corkscrew ramp up to the top,
and the Niagara Falls one will too, but they're not showing any, because all of these have pictures of riders on them, which I guess could be CG, but it says somewhere
that's it's the Branson one, you're right,
yeah, it says it's similar to this one in Branson, Missouri.
All right, so then this isn't as big a deal as I thought. I didn't know any of this existed. I guess we're going to Branson, and before that we're going to see Yakov Smirnoff. So that's where he operates his theater at. I'm not making that up. My mom saw Yakov Smirnoff in Branson, Missouri.
Wow.
It's like a big tourist trap.
Boy.
And Mario Kart in Russia, track races you.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I was trying to think of something like that, and you got it before me.
I'm clever.
Not that was hard.
Ian.
Yeah.
That's it, fruit.
Oh, God.
It could be the greatest invention ever.
It could be.
It could be at this point.
And we're not... Look... People.
Look, listen.
We're not,
Listen.
This is barely an advertisement, because I really like this.
This is officially an endorsement at this point?
I think it's an endorsement.
Would they ask for money for an endorsement? I don't know how that works.
I don't know. Please, you know what, I just want more bars. so, here's a fun story, and this is a true story. I thought I was out of bars.
What is That's It Fruity in?
Okay, That's It Fruit is That's It. It's fruit.
It's a fruit bar.
It's a fruit bar.
100% fruit, no additives, no preservatives.
It's just fruit.
They have like apple, pineapple.
It always starts with an apple.
Apple binds it together, that fiber, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So you got like apple cherry, apple
strawberry.
Strawberries or a grape
apple,
one.
Apple mango.
Mango's good.
Apple blueberry.
Yeah.
I know all of them.
Because you've eaten
apple
all.
Pineapple.
Apple pineapple.
Because I will eat every single one of them. I ran out of... I've always eaten them because, like I said, I think the last time, Vonnie used to always get them for me in these little Starbucks lunch bags.
Uh-huh.
We're not advertising Starbucks, whatever. and when we got our original boxes for this promo, I squealed because I like this. So we went through them very quickly. I gave some to my friends, like I think I said in the last segment about these pregnant and whatever. And I was like, here's some healthy stuff. And then I kind of regretted it because, you know, all of a sudden half my bars were gone. Mm-hmm. And the other day I really wanted some and I was like, oh, shit, I'm out. And I was at work the other day, and I was like, I'm hungry. I got to have something in this backpack of mine, because my backpack is huge and full of shit. And I was rummaging through it, and at the bottom, I found four. I found four That's It fruits remaining.
Four?
It was
like gold.
It was like digging up a fucking...
It's like finding a $100 bill.
Look, they're 100 calories, and they literally have nothing but fruit in them. It's like an apple and 10 strawberries.
It's a real serving of fruit.
Pat didn't believe me that they actually were just fruit. He, like, argued me on it, like, there had to be something else in them.
How are they moist and in a bar shape without something else in there?
They're delicious.
How?
Every flavor is good.
Don't lie to me, That's It Fruit. Don't make me go down to your headquarters and put on a hard hat and take a tour of the factory to make sure.
A face mask. And you know, not breathe.
I'll work the assembly line. I'll investigate this.
Yeah, I'll go all the way through and make sure that's it.
I'll put out a video.
I'll put out a video. I'll even not do it in vertical mode. I'll do it in landscape mode.
Don't mess with me, That's It Fruit. We were on a limb now.
Vonnie likes pineapple flavoring, but she doesn't even like actual... But she doesn't like actual pineapple fruit, and that was like one of her favorites. So anyways...
Allergen-free, vegan, gluten-free, low-calories, non-GMO, no added sugar. It's a real serving of fruit. And 100 calories, and it's fucking delicious.
Before this gets sexual, we'll just end it. But,
it's kosher.
Yeah. I mean,
That's it. Before, that's it, fruit.
That's it. Before we get hot and bothered.
Don't make a maniac out of me.
Nope.
That's it, fruit. I'm trusting you on this. That's it, fruit. Oh, use code CUPODCAST at thatsitfruit.com and save 10%.
Yeah. Get some.
Show them that we're either... Prove us wrong or right by going to thatsitfruit.com and ordering with code CUPODCAST.
Make us the best That's It Fruit sponsors, advertisers.
I don't know.
Whatever it is,
I don't know if I can handle this anymore. It's too much That's It Fruit for me. I'm barely wrapping my head around this concept still.
Send me more That's It Fruit.
Yes.
Ian. It's so easy.
It's been an interesting week in the world of crowdfunding for controllers. There's two we're going to talk about real quick. We're going to bundle this. This is a bundle topic. The first one is the All Controller for PC. It's a Kickstarter. It's already well funded. It's from Digital Depth Inc. It's got 1,500 backers. It just went up while I'm talking about it. 30 days to go. It's a USB controller that touts playing any game in the universe. And it has, you know, it looks like your typical, whatever, 70th generation video game controllers that we're in. You got your crosshair, you got four triggers, you got four face buttons.
You got
two analogs in the front.
You got triggers on the back, too.
Triggers in the back, too. And what's interesting about this, which I think is what the draw is, because there's been a ton of similar style controllers you can get for the PC. Sure.
It's got an LCD panel on the front.
Sure.
And what I think is interesting about it is it allows you to set up customizable profiles for different games. What's interesting is that it has its own internal software for setting up these profiles.
And for customizing.
For customizing. For me, this is interesting because as a PC gamer who plays a lot of older titles or more obscure titles like you know, Japanese shoot 'em ups or things like that, or point-and-click adventures, I want to be able to use a controller. And using something like Joy2Key to constantly...
Which is a software program.
Yeah, Joy2Key is a software, is a free
that,
software
that
program.
That maps keyboard keys to your USB controller.
Right, and you can map, you know, mouse to joysticks and stuff like that. It's kind of a pain in the ass to use. The interface on this, at least as the video shows, looks very intuitive, and I like that aspect of it. And I don't think the price point is too bad.
The early bird one, which is all gone, for the, let's see, the wired one is 55 Canadian, which is 44 US for the wired one. And then for the wireless, it's a little bit pricier. It's 64. It's about $20 more for the wireless Bluetooth one. It's USB wired, so it's wireless and Bluetooth drivers. And okay.
So if you compare that to modern console controllers, that's not bad.
It's in the ballpark.
And it does have some console support. So I think this is very interesting for me because a lot of, you know, if I use like a, I don't know, like a generic PC controller, all of a sudden I might switch from playing something that naturally, you know, fits my controller. I might switch to a shooter where all of a sudden, you know, nothing is working right. It's not recognizing it.
Two other pieces that are interesting. The built-in has supposedly a built-in keyboard mouse driver. Which
right.
Means that I'd be able to play freaking Warcraft 2 using this controller.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's pretty impressive.
That's what I'm kind of getting at. I could also use it to play like a... like a point-and-click adventure.
And then you can then easily inside map the keys to the controller. If you're doing like a, yeah, exactly, point-and-click adventure or a first-person shooter, you can then do that. I think that's what this really comes down to me, is that they're taking ideas that are out there and combining them. So, yeah, you can create macros and stuff with a lot of joysticks that you can buy right now, but you have to use the software.
Right.
That's either included, that could be wonky, who knows, or download your own. You know, stuff like this, like adjusting the dead zone and the joystick sensitivity. This isn't new stuff, but having it built into the joystick LCD just makes it probably a hell of a lot easier to get up and going.
Right, because you don't need outside software. Yeah. It's all internal. It's updatable.
I think even the trigger sensitivity you can even do.
Yeah.
That's
so
pretty cool.
This is all very cool to me. My two major concerns... are this, one related to the controller, one related to the Kickstarter. And like I said, I am fairly interested in this controller, but one is obviously this being a new controller from a new company. I need to know what kind of quality we're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, while the stretch goals are cute, and stretch goals are always a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like the stretch goals necessarily meet what is required monetarily for what you're getting out of them.
You're saying you don't need an extra 700,000 to increase the memory on the controller, Zine?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying.
It's cute, yeah. A bigger battery at $2.5 million.
I mean, so, I realize that these are bonus things, yeah. But most stretch goals tend to reflect the amount of money necessary for...
or at least...
those things.
Or being the sort of like a... the realm of possibility where it's like, okay, this is obviously right. They want more of incentive to do it, but that just seems like they could have lowered those to something that might have been to me a little more effective. But who knows? It's already off to a great start.
It is. So
it's, I mean, it might hit a million. Who the hell knows? know, we're giving free advertising now.
I'm actually interested in this, but that's my big concern is I don't think this company has released any other controller before, so it's going to be the build quality that really that I want to see. You know, I think the one stretch goal that really would require some money.
Play any game in the universe, it says on their site. Okay, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure I can play Mahjong on the table right now. I don't know if I can do that. And it has telekinesis.
Okay, that's, I mean, obviously that's hyperbole. But yeah. Honestly, if you can map keyboard and mouse controls to it.
That'll get you far.
It can get you very far. But yeah.
It says Wii U, Wii and Switch coming soon. Think you'll be able to get this on the Switch?
I do have concerns about that, just because there are ways for... Look, I think people have to be a little pragmatic about this, maybe a little skeptical. You have to look at this as a PC controller. You cannot look at this in the modern console world as a console controller. You can't. Because there's always ways to block third-party controllers.
Oh yeah.
So
if they really don't want, if Nintendo doesn't want them getting in there and screwing around with their stuff,
then they can block it.
Yeah, they can.
As a PC controller, I'm interested.
Go into it as that, and then if other stuff is more compatible, yep, then bonus. Yep. Right?
Go into this looking as a very interesting PC controller. Great. Don't go into this looking at it as a well, unfortunately, don't go into it looking at it as an all controller. Go into it looking at it as a PC controller with a lot of functionality.
So there's another Kickstarter currently going on. It's the next gen N64 controller, Retro Fighters.
And holy shit, did it take fucking long enough for someone to come up with this idea?
So it's already reached a goal. It's 114,000 of 13,000 goal, 3,800 backers, 23 days to go. What exactly is this? So you got your N64 controller with a slightly different layout here. So traditionally on your N64 controller, you would have your stick lower than the D-pad. The D-pad would be top left. They've switched it.
Well, they've changed the layout entirely. It's not a tri-handle controller. It's a two-handle controller. It looks like a traditional controller.
Traditional controller. It looks like the C buttons are a little bit larger. It looks like they added, let's see, dual Z triggers to backup controller.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, instead of the one.
So you can use whatever's comfortable for you. Mm-hmm. The analog Turbo stick is to the left, like a normal analog. Your D-pad is down towards the bottom. It looks more...
It's interesting.
It's a traditional controller for a system that never had a real traditional controller.
Sure.
My concern, and I think that's going to...
It'll sell. I mean, it's selling.
And that's going to sell.
I just personally don't see the large appeal for what is really looks like marketing as... It's called Retro Fighters. A fighting controller on a system that wasn't known for fighting games.
I think the name is...
Because it's designed like a fighting game controller.
Well, I think the name is a bad choice.
It doesn't matter. It hit its goal. It's not a bad choice. It hit its goal.
Well,
but I'm just saying it's
no,
sort of...
No, but I'm just saying I think maybe you're looking at it wrong because of the name. You're going into it with preconceived notions. I think this is fantastic no matter what.
Well, it's good to have a different option because there are those now third-party N64 controllers that you can get for $14-15 that look just like the original and function like the original.
But they don't.
Well,
I mean, the Yobo 64 controller with the PS2 analog stick is, well, for as cheap as it is, it's my favorite.
Well, my question on this is, what is this analog stick like?
Well, no, and this is
that's
where I'm going to go.
The
just
big
like,
question
just
mark.
Like, I said, I'm not going to have the same concern with the all controller and not have the same concern with the Retro Fighters. My concern, once again, is... This is still a third-party controller, and it's all going to come down to its functionality and how well
it handles, mm-hmm. how well it feels, and how well it controls. I think the layout looks great, and I think a lot of N64 enthusiasts are going to love finally having...
This would be more for me for playing like a 3D platformer or playing a Zelda game, maybe. You know,
I think this is going to be great for playing anything.
Not anything, because putting the stick on the left means your first-person shooter experience is out. For a game like GoldenEye, where most people use the analog as a mouse on the right, and then use the left as traditionally on a keyboard to go up and back and strafe.
But I'm a lefty, so I guess I never.
But
did
that's
that.
How most
okay.
play it.
All right.
So that's where the really weird tri-wing design actually works on the N64 for games like that, where you can switch basically two different handles.
Well,
so,
that's fair enough, but I mean, there is room for a controller like
there
this.
Is, but what I'm saying is that analog better be nice and have the same sort of feel to it. And that's where I think the jury is going to be out on that, because just from the looks at it, it doesn't look like the same sort of analog stick. It looks like something closer to a GameCube, just the way in how it's fatter and how it looks like it's stubbier.
Yeah, but I think that's nothing but good. I think if there was one problem with the N64 original stick, it was that it was too tall, too small, it's way too easy to blow out, and it was slippery. It was easy for your thumb to slip off of that N64 stick. But I think the true test for both of these controllers is simply going to be how reliable they are and how effective they are, since we don't really know anything about the manufacturing process.
No, but I did see, I'm trying to remember what I said, I did see someone will question the way the N64 analog is in terms of the shape, and how that shape was very particular to that analog, and how the stick was thrown in, and how this could feel different on this analog. That's what I'm saying. That's my big question to this, is that, sure, if you got this literally for the I'm trying to think, what Killer Instinct Gold, what other fighting games are on that system that aren't in a system that you can play?
This would be great for Mario Kart, though. This would be great for Snowboard Kids. This would be great for any number.
You need analog for Mario Kart. If that analog does not feel right, toss it.
Right, but what I'm saying is as a person who manages Luna Video Games, I've
two
sold...
Two locations, San Diego.
Yep, two locations, San Diego. Come by, say hi. As a person who has converted so many people over to the Yobo controllers, mm-hmm. that use an analog stick, circular, just like this, it hasn't affected many people's
okay.
play styles.
Okay.
So I guess that's the standpoint I'm coming from. This particularity to this fucking shitty slippery.
It's not slippery. Those greases and Cheetos on your thumb.
Not much. That stick is shit.
I can't remember how many times my thumb actually slipped off it. I'm being totally honest.
It's a garbage stick.
I'm not trying to be contrarian. I honestly don't remember me playing GoldenEye and my finger slipping off the top of the joystick.
All right.
I just don't.
But it's just uncomfortable and garbage.
I'm just thinking this is going to be one of those controllers that this isn't going to be your one-stop shop controller for N64. I don't think it's going to replace the other layout. This is going to be a specialized controller for specialized games, and you're going to have to go back to your other one and play certain games. That's just my gut's telling me that. But of course, I got to use it first.
But you know what my gut's telling me? Neither of us really like the N64, so it doesn't really fucking matter.
We don't hate the N64. It's just,
oh, we don't?
I don't hate the N64. I'm
pretty sure you've said some things more negative about it than that in the past.
Yeah, it was probably during the marathon where I was half asleep.
All right. Anyways, it's time for a Q&A.
Is it really?
Yeah.
All right. Q&A time on the CU podcast. We'll do two, then we'll do our Patreon Q&A segment. This is at Anti-Soulless. What would buying games look like if GameStop went under? Under where? Underground?
No.
Like the French Resistance?
No. Went under as in fucking bottomed out and closed down.
They're not going to start machine gunning people.
I think that answer is pretty easy. I think you are looking at what a lot of people are doing now, which is Amazon. You know, Amazon Prime, where you get the discounts earlier. I think you would get a lot of people pre-ordering or ordering off of Amazon, doing eBay buying for older stuff. I think you would see a resurgence of mom and pop shops. if GameStop went under, I think you would see distributors more willing to cut deals, because this would hurt distributors as well.
Because they'd have to find different avenues for those games.
Yeah, distributors would absolutely be fucked.
They would lose.
If GameStop went under.
Think about all the GameStop stores. Yes, they can still do it to Best Buy and the big box stores, Target, Walmart, but there's a lot of GameStops.
You know, if you could walk into a Best Buy or something like that and you see how many copies of it, because Best Buy, if you've ever gone into a Best Buy where they don't have copies of a game on a shelf and you ask them, hey, do you have any in the back? The answer is almost always no. And they don't have many copies of a game on the shelf at any given time. So it's not like Best Buy is ordering a ton of copies. It's not like Target's ordering a ton of copies like GameStop does, where they just have, you know, a bunch of them in drawers or in the back. So if GameStop went under, these distributors are only selling minimal copies to the other chains. So they would have to suddenly become far more amicable with their independent resellers. So you would probably see a rise in independent game shops, but I think you would also see a much larger number of mail order sales.
From where you think, places like PlayAsia?
No, I think Amazon would become
just
one
direct.
Of the, I think Amazon would become one of the bigger direct.
They're getting there though already.
They are, but I think they would also place a much larger focus on making sure you got that game on release date.
Okay.
And I also think, based on top of that, you would see street date become looser, so that Amazon could send things out maybe a day earlier to account for delays, so that everyone got things on street date, but if they got them before, oh well.
Looser, like that stanky leg stool?
Like that stanky leg stool.
When you say there'd be a rise in independent game shops, you're talking about shops that would be catering more towards just new games?
Yes.
And you think it'd be viable to get into that business? What would the margins have to look like on all the new games in order to make any sort of money on that?
They'd have to look like probably $12.
That's it?
12 to 15.
You sure? And that's all you're carrying in the store? You think you can get away with it? I'm thinking they had to be closer to 20.
No, they would have to be. No, you're right.
12? Is it
I've been
taxes?
Drinking away the pain of today.
I was going
to
say.
It would have to be like 20.
Yeah.
It would have to be like 20.
But would the distributor be able to make that deal? I think I still wouldn't think there'd be enough leverage. Because, like I said, because if GameStop went out of business tomorrow.
Let's look at it a different way. Okay. If GameStop went out of business tomorrow,
and there was a void, people would just go to the GameStop, Target, and Walmart.
The retail market wouldn't have a chance to adjust. They would probably try to, in that void, shift to Best Buy, Target, etc.
Yeah.
But what I think we'd end up seeing, you're right, maybe not independent game stores. What might happen is, because it could pop up quicker, is we might end up seeing some sort of universal Steam-like service for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, etc. We might see it switch over to a PC-like structure. I think either of those are potential options.
You're talking a unified store that would sell to you on all platforms at the same time?
Yeah, and just give you a PS4, Xbox One, Switch option.
Well, that means not for every game.
I'm not saying every game would be universal. But
this infrastructure that would have to replace the PlayStation Store and the Microsoft Store and the virtual shop and everything like that.
Well, okay, you would see more digital.
Okay,
you'd see a heavier focus on digital and maybe even a drop in price.
Well, Amazon's selling digital too. They're doing both. Yeah. That 20% off is both for physical and digital, same exact price.
I still think Amazon would probably become the go-to.
All Amazon has to do, the 20% off is, and I know Best Buy has their sale too, but the 20% off is making me look at buying games that's a big discount for a brand new game.
And it makes me look at purchasing a game through Amazon that maybe I wouldn't necessarily purchase outright.
Yeah, you're getting.
I'll take a risk, maybe.
You're getting $12 off, and you're going to get it like in a day, and you have the first week or two to decide. That's a big competitive advantage that GameStop can't match, for example. Now, in terms of bundles, I think Amazon still has to do those bundle packages that or those, you know, buy it at GameStop, pre-order it, and you unlock the shotgun that blows someone's face off. Power to the players. Like, Amazon will probably, you know, like, for example, when L.A. Noire came out, there was a Target pre-order special. Sure. There was a fucking Walmart one that got you different missions. There was a GameStop one, and there could have been a Toys R Us one.
I've noticed that's...
That's died off.
That's died off because
I was pissed about that. I wanted every mission in L.A. Noire, and I still haven't played them all back then.
I have to piss like Clydesdale.
Does that mean we're going to end this topic early?
Yeah, this... Well, this... I think we've said what we can about this topic.
So, okay.
But like a Budweiser horse.
Go piss.
I got to go.
Go piss, Ian. Got a couple more to go.
Yep.
Ian's back from his little pee break.
I think I churned up a dead goldfish from two tenants ago.
Did you find Jax in there?
Yeah. Woo-wee!
Ian asks,
hi, Pat and Ian. Do you guys think replacing a dead battery in an old game cartridge affects its value? Love the show.
It's interesting because I took this question differently than what you did. You took the question as, well, you have to because the dead battery could potentially affect the value of the game because it could damage it. So you should be replacing it. That's how I thought you were taking it.
No, not necessarily.
Okay, then I'm an idiot. Oh, how I took it was people being concerned that because it wasn't the quote-unquote 100% like original hardware inside anymore, it would affect the value negatively having a new battery from the flea market versus the original one that was in my Legend of Zelda cart 30 years ago. So from that perspective, that's the way I took it, which could be. That's one way to interpret it. Someone asked me over the weekend.
It is, but that's yeah. Odd.
So I see how there's three ways to take this question. So the first way to take it is replacing a battery going to affect its value because it's not the original battery anymore? I would say no, because it's a freaking lithium battery.
Right.
To me, that's like replacing the battery in an old car.
Or a watch.
It has to run,
yeah,
after all. You know, and it's not the same as a fucking repro label. That argument with the old class car, shut up. It's not the same.
Right.
Because it's not acceptable. But anyway, so... Well, there's no repro labels on cars. Well, I guess flames. Anyway, but from that perspective, I see that as, yeah, if you want to be able to save your Legend of Zelda cart, to me that would make the value be retained, if not more, because it's operating, it's functioning properly. The other way to take it... because if it's working better, will that make the value go up? What do you think?
Yes. So the best example I can use is something like Pokemon. So we won't take in a Pokemon cartridge at Luna unless we literally have Game Boys on our desks that have masking tape over them that say Pokemon test Game Boy. And every Pokemon game that comes in, and honestly, most popular battery save Game Boy games, Zeldas, etc., will pop in there and we'll test them and make sure that they're still holding saves. And if they do, we buy them. And if they don't, we don't buy them. But sometimes people will say, well, I don't want it anyways, and they'll donate it or whatever, and I'll toss them a few bucks. But so, you know, a Pokemon game that's still holding its battery save will charge, you know, like $30 for. If we end up with enough donated ones, we pass them off to a local guy who will replace all the batteries for us, and we will label them as new battery, and we charge $10 more. It's about $5 for the battery,
mm-hmm,
and we pay the guy $5 for the labor.
Okay.
And he's more than happy to do it. And, you know, we buy the batteries, we pay him $5 for the labor. He's, well, you know who he is, but I'm not going to mention him. You can take a wild guess.
I can guess.
Yeah, yeah. So he does it, and people snap those up way quicker than they snap up anything.
They feel
else.
More secure.
They feel more secure. And we offer a warranty.
Because they're actually playing those games.
Yeah, we warranty those. If the battery goes bad on that, we warranty those differently than other games. If the battery goes bad on that on those within 90 days, we'll take them back and we'll exchange them. We'll replace the battery. But people still feel more confident, especially with a copy of like Pokemon Gold, Silver, or Crystal, which has a running internal clock and drains the battery faster, yeah, they will take that fresh battery over, even though we guarantee that, yes, this came in with the ability to hold saves, they will take that gold, silver, and crystal with a fresh battery for $10 more than they will one that just came in that we tested and know that holds the save. So,
by the way, I think you're paying too much. You can get them for less than $2 in bulk, those Game Boy batteries.
Probably. But we usually get, like, the Duracell ones, you know, just to make sure that they're pretty quality.
All right, I'll check that.
I don't know what we could get them for online. So, anyways, yes, I do believe that replacing a dead battery in an old game cartridge, depending on the game, can certainly affect its value in the positive.
Less than $2 each in bulk Duracell ones.
All right. Well, then I should go online and just buy a
shitload. Do you buy them at the local Rite Aid?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like
you're a business. Buy them in bulk.
It's not like we have a ton of these things laying around.
You're losing money. Jesus Christ. Okay. Sorry.
Well, maybe, honestly, we pay our pal to just do it. And whatever he charges. I don't know where he gets the batteries. Maybe he's making more profit. We used to buy the batteries.
Okay. I don't want to turn this into an awkward conversation about smart business practices, Ian.
Your smart business practice.
So, what's interesting is about those Zelda batteries, though, most of them still are pretty good.
Well, that's the thing.
Amazing.
I don't think it necessarily increases the value of some games, because games like Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, Zelda 2, they're using so little of the battery's power.
It's only when it's first accessed and when it saves. Otherwise, it never touches it.
Right. I mean, I've mentioned this so many times in so many different places that my Dragon Warrior 1 cartridge still has my mom's save game on it from when I first got it.
Sure.
You know, I mean, yes, they do die, but it takes so long that...
Yeah, it's like having a watch on once a week for like 2 seconds. It's going to take forever to drain.
Yeah. So, claiming your Zelda has a new battery in
doesn't
it,
mean
fresh
anything.
Battery, that doesn't mean fuck all.
I've yet to see an NES game claim new battery, it mean anything.
I really honestly think it only matters to games that also have an internal clock. And off the top of my head, I know there's more, but that would be Pokemon Gold, Silver, Crystal.
Your internal clock's ticking right now.
Yep.
Nice, Ian.
Thanks.
All right, Ian. We have a Patreon Q&A segment. Ian, why don't you explain the CU Podcast Patreon to everyone, where they can access it?
You go to www.patreon.com/CU Podcast.
Yeah. You don't need that www. You don't need the http://.
A moment to think.
Because last time you didn't know where our Patreon was.
Yeah.
You gotta write every once in a while on there, Ian. It's been a while, buddy.
Yeah, well, if I wrote today, it would have been bad.
Ian, I got to chip her up. This is a great podcast right now.
Yeah, it is. It's good.
We're making people happy.
We are.
All right.
So it's a happy podcast.
Let's go to a question.
Hey, fellas. This is Gizmo here from Colin from Alabama. Pat, after the Super Nintendo guidebook comes out, any plans on doing something with a smaller run of games? Something like maybe the 32X, which has 34 games, or the TurboGrafx, which is only 138. It sure would save you some time. Bye.
What's that little coy? Sure would save you some time. What am I, a book machine? I could just, like, conjure up a book? TurboGrafx would be easier.
I would like to see a 32X mega pamphlet.
Yeah, I mean, okay. When you talk about a book, you got to think about time versus who the hell's going to actually want to read it and actually purchase it. Because it's not like these books can be written in a week and a half. The first book almost killed me. All right? It almost destroyed me. What's wrong with your face, Ian? Why are you turning the same pink as your City Connection logo? Logo there.
I don't know.
But
I was just, you know, never mind.
You were just pontificating?
Yeah, I was just pontificating.
Yeah. But, I mean, so, okay, Super Nintendo book is going to take a similar amount of effort as the NES book.
Yeah.
Right? Similar amount of effort. So, that's going to be hell again. But there's going to be people that want the Super Nintendo book. There could be more people that want the Super Nintendo book than an NES. Could be. At least the same amount, probably, in my estimation. 32X book. Yes, a lot less effort. I would probably end up selling on Kickstarter 23 32X books.
Like it'd probably be around that amount that would buy a 32X book.
You're going to upload it later, but we actually had a fun conversation similar to this at the Continental Breakfast podcast about the RCA Studio.
The RCA Studio, too.
Where we were just going to hand spiral bound and Xerox, you know, like 12 copies to see if we can break even.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's the over-under on an RCA Studio 2 book. 12 copies that you could sell on a Kickstarter. So for a TurboGrafx 16, it would be more than a 32X. But not anywhere near an NES Super Nintendo book, so you don't know. But there is less games. So if there was a 1,000 TurboGrafx games, that would probably be, I'd be hesitant to even think about that. But being there's 140, and then you can throw in some PC Engine games, it becomes more manageable. And then you can have fun with it, maybe do a history part and, you know, do things like that.
There would be a good trade-off.
There'd be a trade-off where even if you didn't do the same amount of sales, you can still turn probably some sort of profit and make it worth your while, and you wouldn't have to take 3 years to do it.
Right.
You could do a TurboGrafx book in probably less than a year if all your ducks are in a row. Why am I keep saying ducks in a row? I have any other analogy I can use?
Quack.
Ever see ducks in a row? On the lake or pond?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I've only seen ducklings behind their mama duck. I never saw the rest of the ducks in a row.
That's a row.
And so that makes it seem like you're going to be shooting the mama and their ducklings. No one does that. That's not sporting. Is it?
Why do you keep thinking that people are going to shoot the ducks just because they're in a row?
Because you get them in a row to shoot them. That's the expression. You get your ducks in a row, then you shoot them. You don't get them in a row to look at them. Next question.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Zach Wary. My question for you guys is, in 2017, do you think it's viable to start a retro video game shop? The reason why I'm asking this is because I've been meaning to open up my own in my local city, just because the only video game stores we have are GameStops. You know, obviously there's pawn shops that sell video games in addition to a few other things, but one of the comments I've gotten back is obviously the competition from online. Online sellers obviously don't have the overhead expenses that brick-and-mortar shops do. So, again, the question, do you think it's worth opening up a retro video game shop in 2017? And if so, what things would you guys do to make it a viable and successful business? Thanks, and I love the podcast. Take care.
We've actually asked this before, I believe.
We have. And my answer has always been a very, very cautious, fatherly no.
To even have a chance, you have to be, I would say, in a location. There's no other store around for like at least a 30 to 45 minute
drive. No other option. You have to have money to sustain this profit.
For at least a year? 2 years?
No. 3 to 4.
3 to 4?
At least three. The common knowledge in the restaurant industry, and everyone eats, is that you need to be ready to take a loss or not make profit for 3 years.
Sure, but a restaurant has a lot more overhead and expense up front than a retro game store does.
A retro video game store has a lot more cost in up front than it did 10 to 13 years
ago. You're talking about acquiring the inventory.
Yes. So it really depends on what kind of inventory you have.
But if you have the inventory going into it, like a collector does, you have a chance.
Yes, but you have to have a huge collection. A massive collection. Your collection is not necessarily large enough to open a video game store.
Is that a challenge? Do you want me to open up a video game store?
No, but I'm just saying, you've sold off a lot of your doubles and things like that.
Well, sure.
You have singles.
I have singles now, you're right. I don't have 35.
So you have an incredible collection, but that does not necessarily equate a store.
Sure. So the inventory is obviously more expensive to get, even though the prices have come down a little bit. You know,
so you either have to be able to find really good deals and charge going rate, or you have to take the risk on buying at slightly lower than going rate and charging slightly above going rate.
Just to get the stuff in.
Just to get the stuff in. And then you have to wait a couple of years until you have a customer base that will constantly bring you rolling trade-ins, at which point then you start to sit more comfortably as you don't have to worry about going out to get your stock. People bring it to you. And that was a lot easier 10 years ago. The only thing that's changed my opinion slightly and this is not me saying, okay, go run out and get it and do it, is that someone did come up to me in Phoenix and they said, hey, you know, I'm real happy to meet you. You know, it's great. I want to talk to you about, you know, opening a store. You told me, I think it was the person who originally asked this question. They were like, you know, you said not to open one. They said, and I took your advice to heart, but due to circumstances, I ended up with a lot of games and things happened and I couldn't store them anymore. So I did. And I opened them. I opened a store in an area that had no stores in the outskirts of Phoenix, and we're doing great. And I was like, well, congratulations. But it really depends on the situation of the
sure,
area.
Sure, you also have the area where people, a decent amount of populated area where they can acquire those games themselves, too. Or not.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just rely on, at this day and age, people just clearing out their closets for games. At this point, you also have to rely on having a population of either collectors or gamers that have had a lot of games for a long time and have a decent amount of stock they're going to trade that in.
So
and keep it going.
I think the two major things are, what is your rent? How dedicated are you to potentially running the store entirely on your own for the first couple of years to cut down on employee and overhead costs? And how cheaply can you acquire your inventory? Because if you get a windfall and you acquire, you know, you can acquire 1,500 PS2 games for next to nothing and get some good stuff in there. Well, great. You've got one section of inventory taken care of. Mm-hmm. And then if you have to pay a little bit more for your NES stuff, but you've got some good PS2 stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, you've got to be able to shuffle that around. You got to, it's one of those things where you have to, it's almost at the point now, like you said, with opening a video game store, you have to look at it as being a collector first. And if you're willing to dump money into a collection but think about opening a store later, it depends on how many windfalls you can come into. If you can come into enough to open a store and you're financially stable, then go ahead and do it.
Last question from this person.
Hello, everyone. Daniel Greenberg calling from Winter Iron Game Studios in the historic video gaming district of Clifton, Virginia.
Hello, Daniel.
Question to chew on. As VR platforms expand beyond early adopters, what classic game franchises do you think are best suited to take advantage of the tech, and why? Thanks again for the podcast, gang.
Very efficient. Daniel, thanks for the question. Very efficient, straight to the point, said your name, where you're from, and plus you're writing for a certain Super NES guidebook as well, Daniel. So, what classic game franchises would best suited for VR? That's
okay.
A tough one.
So, actually, it's pretty easy because I think it was... Well, one good answer... one serious answer would be... after playing Metroid Prime, just the first one at least, and seeing how well they did it in first person, I think Metroid could be interesting in VR. A still serious but more joking answer that Norm and I talked about at Game On Expo in Phoenix was Duck Hunt in VR.
Okay, you're seeing a pattern here, for sure.
No, but Duck Hunt gives you a whole world to hunt ducks in.
Uh-huh.
But then Norm and I decided we would just fuck off and explore the world.
Yeah, that could be fun.
And just
but,
not
But
not
you see, the pattern
ducks.
Is that you're relegating this to first-person shooters.
No.
VR, though.
But no, that's the point.
Duck Hunt's a first-person shooter.
You think first-person shooter with something like Duck Hunt, but if you make the world rich enough, you just go off and do whatever the hell you want.
Your concept of classic games is now limited to first-person shooters because I've seen the gameplay of the VR Super Mario Brothers and stuff like that. I have no intention of ever wanting to play that.
No.
That looks fucking awful.
Oh, yeah.
You're never going to translate over the same experience of a side-scroller to a virtual reality platformer like that. It's just not going to happen.
Something like Wipeout, the Wipeout series would be great.
A racing game, obviously.
Yeah.
Because you're almost there. It's as close to a virtual reality game as you're going to get, playing like an arcade-style racer.
Sure. In reality, I guess if we're talking seriously...
Troopers 3. Yeah. Virtual reality. What?
I don't think there's a lot of stuff that... Maybe it's why I'm not so interested in VR. I don't know that there's a lot of stuff that does translate to virtual reality very well.
There is not.
Besides shooters and stuff like that.
I'm still waiting for that. Oh, this is the year VR is going to take off. Still waiting. Still waiting.
Yep. I mean, I've played some good stuff in VR. I played Thumper in VR, which is a rhythm game. But why it works in VR is because it's still coming from the zooming down a track standpoint.
Thank you, Daniel, for the question and those other questions. We have a bunch of others. We're going to get to them next time. If you want to ask a question via voice, voice is the hot thing, Ian. It's going back from digital and text to voice. You know it's digital. Go to patreon.com/CU podcast. We have a bonus segment that I forgot to. We're not going to spend that much time on it, Ian. There was a huge collection in Milwaukee, retro collection, that was reported on in the Milwaukee Record, and for $30,000. And what's interesting about this collection, we talked about collections before in the podcast, this one doesn't seem extremely overpriced.
No, it doesn't.
I would say that.
Yeah.
I put the link there, Ian, at the bottom of the Q&A that you can see it. So this collection, the other cool thing about this one, on this, you can look at the pictures. It includes like the World of Nintendo display, like I have the fiber optic one. It has those cool Game Boy Super Nintendo shelf displays where the actual games and the boxes go in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a decent amount of games. Now, I'm not going to postulate that this is worth $30,000, but this isn't like the ones we've covered in the past. They're like $89,000 for
$20,000 worth of games.
Yeah. There's a Pac-Man chalkboard. There's the Legend of Zelda treasure chest to store toys on it. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting.
It is.
And there's also a Google Doc of the items that you can click on. So what I don't like about a lot of the ones we've covered in the past, it'd be like, oh, 3,000 games, and I'll list like 50 of them. You can guess what the fucking rest of them are.
Right. No, this lists all of them.
Do you want to go through the list?
Well, you can pull up the list while I talk for a little bit.
Yeah, okay. I already pulled the list up. Go ahead and talk.
So what is interesting to me is that this collection and this person selling it, it seems to be part of a larger trend, though. While this one's definitely more reasonable, and I like that. I like that this guy's being real reasonable about his collection and his offer. But it's kind of a trend that we're seeing. It's these people who are selling off their collections because they need the space. They're married. They're getting ready to start a family. And they're realizing they don't have the room for this anymore. They don't have a game room anymore. And suddenly, they don't have space for this, so they got to sell it off.
And then they got in touch with me, Ian.
Huh?
They emailed me.
Right. But what I want to, the reason I want to kind of bring this up is, this person never probably thought that they would get rid of their game room. And I'm just going to say it real quick. All these people who talk about how they're never going to get rid of their games, and repro labels don't hurt anyone, and all this sort of stuff, you might find yourself in a position at some point where all of a sudden you're going to get rid of your games real quick and, oh my God, they're out in the wild again. So you may think that your game collection is permanent right now, but it's not. And, you know, I admire this guy for offering up his collection and just saying he wants people to enjoy it and offering a reasonable price. But, Pat, take it away with the list.
So, we got 536 NES games. So, not a full library, but a respectable-sized library. How many in the box there? Less than 100. Super Nintendo, you're talking. Let's see how many Super Nintendo. It's a Google Doc, but you can't edit it. There is about 80 Super Nintendo games. Okay, not as much there. But you got, like, your heavy-hitter popular ones. Like, you got your Super Mario, all the Super Mario games, and RPG, and Super Metroid. And you got your Zombie at My Neighbors. Doesn't Link to the Past. Super Metroid. So you got all the fun ones.
Right.
So we're not talking not a huge amount of money. Chrono Trigger, Castlevania 4, all Donkey Kong countries, you know, the Kirby games. So that's a respectable amount of money right there. Again, we're trying to build up to 30. I'm not saying 30 is a proper number, but, you know.
It's not as outlandish as what other
stuff that
people
we've seen.
Right, because we've seen other collections that ask insane amounts, yes, but they don't have things like Stadium Events or Little Samson. This is a guy who's at least adjusting somewhat sure. for not having
sure.
those.
Sure, 115 N64 games. Many of those are in the box, by the way. And actually, a decent amount of Super Nintendo ones are in the box, too. And you have, your, obviously, your Mario Parties, your Mario Kart, your Mario Golf, Pilot Wings, Powerpuff Girls, Chemical Extraction, all your Zelda versions. Game Boy, not only like 10. And then you have your systems. You have, wow, he has every N64 variant system. Smoke, yeah. Gray, Watermelon, Lime, Green,
he
Velvet
did,
Green.
I remember seeing that.
Complete in box. Green,
he had a lot
box,
of box
yellow
and
controllers.
Complete systems.
All the controllers, excuse me. He has all the controllers a lot in the box. Then he has expansion ports. He has a bunch of, wow, who has more than three NES in the boxes? I mean, he does that. And then I like all the promo and displays.
Yep.
That's what I like. Yep. That's, to me, where the money starts coming
come
in. Yep. Because when you start averaging out, for example, like I said, like those shelf displays where you put the NES cards in, depending on you, I mean, it's hard to price those out, but you go to an auction at like a PRGE at Portland, those can go for $500 or more easily each. I mean, easily. Those displays. That fiber optic, you can get probably $1,000 for that at this point, just for that. So that's what I mean. When you really get into it, you can see how this starts piling up. Not again, not saying 30,000, but 15, 20. That's probably not a realm of possibility.
And,
so,
I mean, unlike the other ones where it's obscene, at least this one, for someone with the money, to just be like, if you have the money, okay, for convenience sake, there is, I guess I have slightly less of a qualm with this one for just being like, okay, here, I'm getting it all right now.
And by the way, Robert Stack, update.
Update.
That used to freak me out as a fucking kid.
I fucking love the Stack, man. Anyways, shame he's dead. Rest in peace.
Update, it's no longer listed for sale. So this could have been a private deal that he already pulled the listing. I wish he emailed me back, but he did email me because I asked questions like, when did you start collecting? Why are you getting out? So I'm just going to read the email, then we're going to get out of here and get some Wendy's. I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and played a ton of NES, Super Nintendo. During high school, most of the games I acquired as a kid sat in my grandma's basement, but I picked up the hobby again in college. For the past few years, I spent most weekends at garage sales, flea markets, auctions, making Craigslist deals, etc. I would say 80% of my collection came locally. Wow, that's a high percentage. But a few pieces were from eBay. The Rent N64 banner and One Clock were nice eBay snags. W-O-N Clock, not sure what that is. I asked him if he's keeping anything. What is it? One Nintendo clock?
World of Nintendo.
Oh, World of Nintendo clock. I'm only keeping one N64/Super Nintendo/NES console and my favorite double-sided Super Mario sign. That double-sided sign can go for like $400 or $500 probably.
Yeah.
The point. Again, signs go for a lot. My plan is to buy EverDrives for the collection. Set after the collection's gone. I really like the idea because I can still play my favorite games on the original hardware. More and more people are doing that.
Yep.
What someone
I did on, it with my game, NES collection.
Someone in Game On Expo told me they're doing that specifically.
Yeah.
My favorite system to collect for is N64. Here's a cool story. I knew a guy in Madison, Wisconsin, who was going for a mint complete only N64 set. He would open the sealed games and sell me his boxes. So that's interesting. there isn't really a single prized piece that he's after, but the World of Nintendo, fiber optic, always gets the most attention. That's his favorite piece, is that. And again, I'll get at least a grand at this point.
Mine's still on for sale.
Final thoughts. I thought you sold it. Collecting, find my Caltron manual. Final thoughts. Collecting 6 or 7 years ago was so much fun. I don't know why you're giving me the finger. You screwed me out of that. Every Saturday, I could stop at a garage sale or Goodwill and find a bunch of retro games for dirt cheap. Craigslist and eBay were flooded with parents who wanted to get their kids' shit out of basements and attics. Yes. But a couple of years ago, the hobby started booming. A couple of years, I'd say 3 or 4 at least. More collectors got into the scene, and finding anything locally became more of a chore than anything I actually enjoyed. Within the past year, I've only made a couple of cool purchases, which made me realize that my hunt for games was just as fun or more fun than actually playing the games themselves. Cheers, Charles. Pat, happy to buy you a beer and some cheese curds if you ever happen to be in Wisconsin. Thanks,
Charles.
I like
cheese curds, too.
But it's important because it's something you hear from... Yeah, Ian's invited, too. We can go to the next Tecmo Bowl tournament. It's something you hear about Thrill of the Hunt being important too.
Yeah.
Going out to garage sales. The competitive nature has gotten to the point where, yes, it is hard, really hard to find stuff at flea markets or he goes to garage sales, things like that anymore. And it's just a combination of things. You realize that, you know, sometimes you just look and say, hey, do I really need all these games? Where's my life gone? Why am I in my late 30s and, not making any headway with anything in my personal endeavors or business.
Because all pro basketball was something you had to have.
What? Are you saying something? Oh, okay. Yeah, all pro basketball. Yeah, two stars. So anyway, there you go, Charles. Good luck. I think you sold your collection already. I might send you an email right now. Hey, did you sell your collection? I'll put a little text thing if you can answer me by tomorrow. Hey, did you end up selling? I saw the listing gone. Smiley face. Okay. Any last thoughts, Ian? No. Okay, great. Awesome. My life means nothing.
Okay. Good night.
That's it.
Good luck.
That's it for this CU podcast. This is a weird one. This is a strange CU podcast. You're going to get me in trouble with the CU podcast.
You can edit out the troublesome
podcast. I can edit out the second one. The first one is going to be a little harder to edit out.
Leave the first one in.
Okay. Well, whatever. Then our pals online will come after you for a change, not just me.
That's fine.
Ian, feel in order. I like aggressive Ian. If you want to support us, it's patreon.com.
Come at me, fuckers.
It's patreon.com/CU podcast. You can follow us and please subscribe on Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, your podcast platform of choice.
Fucking hack.
Follow Ian. He's on Twitter at PixelSickle. Follow me at PatTheNES. For Ian Ferguson.
You're an April Fool's joke, you fucking son of a bitch.
I'm Pat Contry. We'll see you later.